I'm Kate Botello, and technically this is a Studio A session, but because of the instrument we're going to hear today, we actually have to hear it in the Dendrinos Chapel and Recital Hall. So it's a Studio A from the Dendrinos Chapel and Recital Hall, and I'm here today with Interlochen senior Emily Amos, who's just 15 years old, and she's in the finals of the Albert Schweitzer Organ Competition, which is coming up very soon. Thanks for being here, Emily.
Thank you.
So how do you manage to be a 15-year-old senior?
I skipped a couple grades, so I just jumped.
So here you are.
Yeah.
I was reading a little bit about you and that you're from a small town in Louisiana.
Yes.
And everybody asks you why you don't have a southern accent. Why not?
Though I am from Louisiana and my dad is from Alabama, my mom is Canadian and southern accents are not exactly her thing. Though sometimes I do have one when, like, I get irritated or slightly more emotional, it will show up. But most of the time, I just don't.
How does one decide to become an organist? It's a very huge instrument to take on, and involves a lot more than a piano might. Did you start with piano and then move to organ?
I did.
Now, the organ, though, requires more than just hands and more than just feet. I mean, your feet are extremely active, but there are 1,000 buttons and stops and things to pull. How do you keep track of all of that?
When I'm looking at a score and when I'm planning and practicing, when I have certain buttons or pistons to push, I tend to make a note of that. So, like, one of the ways I've discovered that I really like to use is to put, like, those Office Depot stickies on, like, the spots where I want to push the piston, and I write in the number of the piston, and I'll just work that into my muscle memory. And from there, it's not really as hard. It's kind of like you just think about it and do it.
And for those of us who are new, what exactly happens when you push in a piston?
Stops are the sounds of an organ. So when you hit a piston and you have set something on that piston, it's recorded in computer memory, it either takes away or pulls on more stops. So you either have less or more sound.
Oh, so it's kind of like a faucet. It turns the sound off and on.
Yeah.
Aha. There were a lot of ahas in the audience just now. I could hear it. Now, you're going to play for us a pretty athletic piece today that requires, pulling out all the stops. Maybe that's where that came from.
I think it is.
Probably. Now, is this the piece you're playing in the competition?
It is. We were allowed to choose one of the pieces that we're going to play. And this one was the one I chose. So,
tell us about this piece.
It's called the Prélude and Fugue on the Name of Alain, or if you want to get French, it's Prélude et Fugue sur le Nom d'Alain, by Maurice Durufle. And Alain, the name, refers to another French composer who is a good friend of the Durufles. And he fought in World War II and died. And so in his memory, Durufle composed this piece. And in this piece, the fugue subject, so the main theme of the fugue, is based upon the letters in Alain's name. So instead of just having A to G, and then if you added B a natural as H, as was commonly done in some periods, you just extended that and had A as I, as well as, like, and kept going that way, you would come up with the five-note figure that spells out A-L-A-I-N. And the prelude describes, musically, the battle, almost. It's very quick and murky. And you don't quite know what's going on. And then suddenly there's this pause and a D major chord very near to the end. And everything's very calm, and it's almost like Durufle is reflecting upon times with Alain.
And now from the Dendrinos Chapel and Recital Hall here on the campus of Interlochen Center for the Arts, Emily Amos plays Durufle.
Thank you.
So, wow, that is a very intense piece of music. And yes, you are an octopus. You are all over the place playing this. I have to mention that I noticed as your feet were flying over the pedals here, you are wearing some gorgeous shiny gold shoes. Please tell me about your shoes.
Some organists, mostly Americans, tend to wear organ shoes. Like, I say mostly Americans because a lot of the European organists think we're kind of crazy for wearing them. I just happen to wear gold because they used to be the only ones that fit me when I started playing. They just kind of became one of those things where I was like, I don't want to wear boring old black shoes.
What is it specifically that makes this an organ shoe?
The suede helps us to slide on the pedals not like too much, like say a hard sole would where you just like fall off the pedal. But at the same time, you're not sticking, which is probably what a normal sole of a shoe would do.
And of course, your socks. You mentioned that organists and socks are a thing. Can you explain that, please?
Oh, yes. Throughout like travels that I've had and organists I've encountered, I've noticed quite a few professional organists love to jazz up their socks. Because a lot of organists tend to wear like black or like super formal attire. But the socks are a nice way to just be like, I have personality other than this like funeral attire.
Come to our website, by the way, interlockinpublicradio.org, where we have a picture of Emily's beautiful shoes and socks as they are hard at work on the pedals. Good luck, toy, 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 however
you
want to say that. And listeners, we will keep you up to date and let you know how Emily's contest went. Emily Amos, thank you so much.
Thank you.